And I say this about money. To gain clarity, you need to have, to lose it all, or to have a lot. That's when you actually know what you really want to do.
Mr. Peter Kironji.
Hey.
Welcome to the Chini Maji podcast.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you.
Pleasure to be here.
You and I know each other for 6 months now?
Around that, yeah.
Around 6 months, yeah. And we've done a few things together. But it's good to do something else, a podcast. And the purpose of this podcast, Peter, is just to kind of share entrepreneurs' experiences with the rest of the ecosystem so that people who are coming behind you can actually learn from your mistakes and successes, our mistakes and successes, and also just to give a voice to our ecosystem so we can tell our own stories and not let other people define what building a startup in Africa is about. Sindio?
Yes, yes.
So it's really good to have you. And you're the CEO and founder of Twiva, co-founder of Twiva.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do?
Many things, but what we are particularly good at is to help brands, most MSMEs, to effectively gain access to customers. That's where we shine. So we do that by working with social media influencers to market and to sell their goods and services. So that's how we create value for these businesses.
And we'll dive into that a little bit more, into the technicalities, how it works, but thought we'd just kind of talk a little bit about who you are, what you do, and then we can dive into the thing. Let's take a step back and kind of go back into a little bit of your history and background. So, born and raised in Kenya?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, just snapshot of what that experience was like, where you were born, high school, whatever you want to share around your background, and then we can take it from there.
Interesting. Where do we start? So yeah, born and raised in the central province, went to my high school in shitty school by the name Jambini Boys, called. That prepared me for my Canadian journey for sure, because they would freeze our fingers. I was a sharp kid, very aggressive, so scored straight A's. And then I joined the Equity Leadership Program, where they sort of like take folks who lead in their provinces, and then they give you a job opportunity. It's a fancy job title, but a very premium opportunity. I think they were calling this relationship manager, but you're basically a cashier, a teller. But that was one of my very premium opportunities in terms of structuring a young man to be able to navigate the complexity of dealing with people and money. So did that for around 1 year before I transitioned. This is when in Kenya you would have to wait for 2 years before you go to campus. But that year they had reduced that to 1 year. So did that, moved around. There's something we're doing around Equity Centers of Excellence, which is you go to teach high school kids. They had chosen 3 schools across the country. This is Equity Bank. So did that and then joined JQuat. At the same time, I was doing boot camp with Equity Bank, trying to, look for other opportunities to go study abroad. So JQuat, I think I was there for 2 semesters. The day we were doing our finals, I just hated everything. I didn't go to sit for my first examination. I just went home.
That bad?
Yeah.
What did you not like? You came from Jambini. Is it Jambini?
Jambini, yeah.
And then to JQuat.
Yeah.
So this was a downward spiral, or your expectations were higher than what had
nothing
changed?
Can be lower than Jambini Boys, so it can only go up for sure. No. Well, it's nuances to it, I hated that, and it's nothing to, classism and whatnot, but the pace, you are seated next to someone who is telling, my D plus is good enough. The speed was frustrating me.
So Jake, what had regressed to D plus?
there's this Kenyan, what do you call this, when you can join a, I think, parallel program or something, which is you can pay your way into an engineering.
So basically they diluted the talent pool, essentially, right? By letting people pay to attend schools. That they didn't qualify, they otherwise would not qualify for, based on their grades.
So I was frustrated by the speed there. Like, you can, you know, it's an engineering, electrical and I think they were calling it telecommunication and blah, blah, blah engineering, which is funny because it was not even accredited by the Engineering Board of Kenya. So from the onset, like, why are you doing that degree?
So if you graduated with that, you wouldn't be recognized?
Would
you,
as an engineer.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know whether that has changed, but that...
At the time, that was the state of affairs.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I exit. The same day I left is the day I received the acceptance to the University of Toronto. And the difference here was that I was accepted to what, how many? I think around four schools, but mostly were US-based. So it was not a full scholarship, but this one was a full scholarship. It was the first year that MasterCard Foundation had spinned this MasterCard Foundation program to airlift folks to go study abroad, mostly in Canada, US, and a few countries in the European space.
Nice.
So that's what I do. Join, do electrical and computer engineering. And while I'm doing this, I'm doing so many gigs, like four or five.
In Toronto now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
what was that transition like from... Okay, so you just walk away from JCOAT, not knowing that you had the scholarship.
Yeah.
And then how did you find out the scholarship was awarded? Was it somebody call you? Was it a letter? Did you go home? And how? This is a very interesting...
Yeah.
Ton of events.
Yeah. I think it was an email first, and then I received a call from a gentleman at Equity Bank then, who was actually helping us navigate the SATs and whatnot. But I believe it was an email. And I had gone to, actually didn't go home. I went to a family member, my auntie. And I lied to her. I told her I had just completed my examination so that I can stay there. I just wanted to figure it out.
Because that would have opened up a whole kind of worms that you didn't want to deal with, right?
Yeah.
You're kind of... What was your plan? Were you planning... I mean, you don't do your... You walk away from doing your examination, and then... What were you thinking? What was in your mind?
See, you have all these acceptance letters that you have received, but you don't have full scholarship.
I see. So you had some signals of something.
That it's going to work out. Okay. And if it didn't, I was willing to try again. But I was just tired with JCOAT.
Okay. So I guess take a step back a little bit and say, okay, so growing up, what did you want to become? What was your, were you those folks who want to become a pilot? What was the thing in your mind, a business owner? What were you aspiring to become as a young person, as a kid, high school?
That's an interesting one. So... My dad was an entrepreneur, so that's what I grew observing. So there was that interest. But my parents wanted me to be a doctor. And it also happened that in our school, they used to have a file. And they kept programming you to align with what your parents want. So whenever my mom would come to school, we'd go to my file. And I knew, I hate to see blood, by the way.
To see what?
Blood. Like
blood. Okay. Yeah.
So, it was just on file, going to be
a doctor. Wow.
To the extent that I actually wanted to fail myself on biology so that I don't.
So how did it get into the file? Your parents?
I think they're still doing that thing. Like they actually, so they start with you and they speak to you next to your parents and they say, hey, you have a bright son here, what do you want him to become? And
they ask your parents what they want. Wow.
It's in,
Jesus.
It's a cold place, so low expectations. I mean.
No pressure.
But I knew at some point that I wanted to be an engineer because I would excel in the technical subjects. But I didn't like biology. I didn't like the languages and whatnot. I was still excelling because I just wanted... anything I was doing, I just wanted to win, to be number one.
Where did that come from? That's an interesting trait.
Yeah. I would say it's the family setup.
Okay.
Without details, I have 17 siblings.
And where do you fit in that ladder?
The last boy among so many. Because there's nuances to that, and after me is three sisters. So you want to be very aggressive, and as you mature, You want to protect, to lead the sister. There's just something there. But before me is a line of boys, a lot of masculinity, a lot of energy, a lot of competition. So I think it came from, and again, the dad is an entrepreneur. So that environment sort of like what shapes that, to want to be the number one.
Amazing. And knowing you, just spending time around you, there's that fire. you're always trying to slay a dragon around every corner, man. So I really enjoy kind of syncing up with you, because you're always coming up with, you always have stories about how you've slayed a dragon. And that's super exciting. So Canada, what was that like? What was that transition like from the slow pace of Jake Watt to which university in Canada?
University of Toronto.
Which is a good school, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What was that like? What was that transition like?
I have so many stories to tell there, so I choose a few. The first one, my shoes.
Okay.
So I met this professor. He was a Ghanaian, but a U of T professor. You know,
U of T?
University of Toronto, we call it U of T,
okay,
sorry.
Okay, got it.
And it was in the middle of winter, because that was the first semester. And of course, you're trying to network, know people. The first thing you gravitate towards is the
someone who looks like you.
Yeah. So this prof, the first thing he told me was that I have to lose my shoes, because they were Nike shoes, fake ones from, I don't know where I got them, but they were clean.
Okay.
In the middle of winter. And then I asked him why. He told me, you realize this is the only clean thing in the entire country. Because it's the middle of winter, snowing and what.
But they're shoes.
No. Well, it's a job, but it starts to show you that there's misalignment here, and you have to start to look at the nuances. So once you start to go into food, you're very conservative. So for example, things like a bag, and it has cheese, and it has, like, say it's the English muffin, it has eggs and the meat. But you sort of like, is the egg done? Because, you know, you're trying to navigate that. So you gravitate towards one thing until you start to become comfortable.
Right.
So some culture shock to some extent matters, mostly food, and then weather to some extent, because I didn't anticipate that I can get to negative 40.
Yeah, that's what?
Yeah.
Wow,
that,
I didn't know that.
Particular winter, it went, I think, around 45 or so, but these days I think it's relatively warmer, negative 30.
Minus 40. What's that? What does that feel like, negative 40, if you could describe it?
Well, for a kid that just transitioned, it's weird, because it's exciting, it's something new, but you don't enjoy it. So, of course, you're just working with your body, like how, what activities.
So walking across from one building, because negative 40 is even hard to imagine, but I've never been in that type of environment. Fortunately, for me, I was in California, so we didn't have that problem. But that just sounds to me like... Is there something you can describe? How long can you stay outside?
Yeah, okay, not long for that kind of weather, but also you have the light gear, which is the other part, right? Like those shoes that cost, $500, and you're sort of like doing the conversion. Remember, you're transitioning.
Right.
So you apply the times 100, right? Then, like, there's no way I'm going to buy that kind of a shoe. But once you fit in, you just dress for the weather, then minimize how long you are
outside.
Yeah. But also they have this under the tunnels that you can use if there is...
What about on your state of mind and your mood? You're used to kind of like perennial sun and, you know. Did you notice a change in how it affected you at all?
I'm very introverted, and it's not easy to see, because I have mastered when to switch it on and off. So I was comfortable, because the nuance is there is that, of course, here we socialize. You sit next to a person in a bus and whatnot, you just kick it off, have a good conversation. Over there, there's, you know, personal distance. And whatnot. So it's not easy. You have to really work yourself up to even a friendship, even with your dudes. And remember, if it's the programs, you're moving from one course to the other, you don't have time to really socialize, and your style is different.
Right.
So that's the first thing. But you being an introvert, it doesn't really affect you much that you're not talking to people. But what I did from the onset is to be very aggressive to network, and I knew the places to go to make sure that I broaden my network.
And what as an introvert, networking is kind of like torture, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
What gave you the idea that that's a good idea? What made you think, right? Because when you're in school, you're just kind of trying to get by, you know, you just, you know, straight line.
Yeah.
It's an unusual, I guess, realization for somebody who's in school to network aggressively. What gave you that idea and what were you looking for?
I don't know. I just wanted to know my environment and to know people. So, and of course, these things start, you know, you have a conversation with someone, the next person, and then you realize actually people have value. Actually, remember my first trip to Toronto, I met this couple, and the conversation they were having is around that my advice for you is that once you get there, you have to network and you have to build a very solid circle that you can lean into. Because I think they had some context there. I think their kid was in Zimbabwe and whatnot. That's why they were headed back to Canada. So I always had that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That I have to broaden my network to feel safe and to start to build an infrastructure that I can leverage to attract value my way.
Amazing. And you took that to heart and clearly... went after it. Okay, so we jump forward a little bit, and maybe this is related to that networking. This next question: you founded a company, or were co-founder in a business. You built a product and with some folks, and then got acquired or sold. So, what was that about? How did that come about? You know, talk to us about that.
You know Craigslist, the platform?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's what? Maybe an equivalent of Gigi here. Like folks are selling anything and you can get services.
Online marketplace and stuff. Yeah.
So I was on that platform. I don't know what I subscribed to. And then meet these two awesome dudes, professional doctors.
Mm. But nowadays Craigslist has a reputation for different types.
That's why I went there and said, like, hey, yeah.
Professional doctors, yeah.
That's why I have to say professional doctors. But anyway, remember this is what? I think I'm in my first or second year. So, hey, anything. Like, you're just trying to get opportunities.
So and what remember, were you looking for on Craigslist when you...
Everything and anything, any gig that I could do. Because remember, the kids who are surrounding you, you know, folks are, they have three jobs, but they're in the same class and they're beating you. Mm. So you want to win. And to win is not to just score good grades. Mm. It's that I want to have three jobs, you know, keep myself busy. So it's that kind of a drive. Mm. That's why you're going online to say, hey, is there someone who just want me to build a website for them and whatnot? Mm. So I find a networking opportunity, blah, 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 join. I just show up. And then just start to network. You meet one guy and then says, hey, you should meet so-and-so. Later we start to grab drinks. I think the third or the fourth session is where we, you know, folks are just having conversation. This gentleman says that my fiancé is earning more than I am. So, of course, the obvious question was, is she another doctor? This guy says, no. She is something folks are calling influencer. I'm like, okay, what's that? I didn't know, I had never heard, I know influence, but I didn't know what an influencer is. This guy didn't even know. It's a doctor and this thing. So he doesn't really care other than the money part is, okay, there could be something here. So the fiancé had a pet, a dog.
Okay.
And she was flying all over. She had how many Ds? I think three solid ones, Delta, Toyota, and I don't remember the other one.
She had how many what?
Deals.
Like deals, okay. Contracts. Like contracts,
with,
okay.
With these corporations.
Yeah.
So the next time we meet, and this guy says, hey, you're an engineering kid, you can build a platform where we can onboard more of these. And then he invites me to go to the house and understand what they're doing. It's basically cameras, the lapel pins and whatnot, and then she's flying all over.
And this, what year is this?
This is 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then I was doing so many things, like just coding, just then I used to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Then it's not even software development, like what do you know? It's basically coding or programming. Mm-hmm. Then I find this to be quite interesting because I don't understand it fully. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to understand, okay, what's an influencer, social media nuances. So do that fairly quickly, start to build the platform. And then we realize that there's actually something here because as we are building, we are starting to move around. Mostly it was like the nightclubs and nightlife in terms of where we were trying to create value for, which is mobilize people to attend
So she was promoting
events, clubs. Yeah, like clubs and whatnot. Right,
interesting.
We are still building the platform. Mm. So when we notice that there's actually an opportunity here, we say, okay, let's actually onboard engineers who can help us build this thing and do it fast. Mm. So we do that fairly quickly. Around 6 months, we have a minimum viable product that we can start to test, move around and ask folks. Mm. Then we just launch. It took off within, I think, 3 months. You show up and people know you. And remember, for me, I'm still on campus. That's something different for
right.
me. Like, right. I start to be really drawn to this entrepreneurship and this thing. Mm. And then, yeah, we started there and then started to serve all kind of manner of brands. You're pushing financial products, services.
And so just describe what the platform was.
Yeah.
What was the platform?
Nothing fancy. Mm. Just a marketplace, a two-sided platform. Mm. So you have the brands and you have the influencers.
Okay.
And the responsibility there is just to connect both.
Right.
So number one is that there's the two databases folks can choose. If it's the brand, what influencers do you want to work with, and the other way. And it was just sort of like a what? It's just like they are pushing campaigns and influencers are selecting that. I would call it sort of like what most platforms in Kenya are. You are Wowzies and Air Influence. Mm-hmm. Just an infrastructure to connect the demand and the supply side. Mm-hmm. And then it was not even heavy tech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so when you say it took off, describe what that means actually.
Yeah.
I guess the numbers.
Yeah. So again, mostly it was the small businesses because mm-hmm. you are medium enterprises and above. They don't really need this then because folks didn't even understand what this is. Mm. So took off was, there was a referral program that was baked into the product that you as an influencer, you can invite others. So okay. that was the first thing.
Okay.
That shot. I think we had like 5,000 influencers, and these are solid influencers.
It seems like early for even the whole influencer thing, but the idea that there was 5,000 of them, if you could help us understand the difference between an influencer then and an influencer now, I mean, are they the same? How would you, in terms of audience and reach and whatever way you would describe that, right? Because 5,000 influencers back then seems, it wasn't even, I don't know, right? It seems early. Help us.
So here's the thing though. Back then, and I saw the same thing in Kenya when we started Twiver. Mm. These were the genuine influencers, the good, credible influencers, because they were not doing it to monetize it. They were doing something they were good at.
Got it.
Right? So then when you present an opportunity to monetize that, of course they're going to jump on that
course,
opportunity. Mm-hmm. But then it was sort of like, hey, these guys are creating good content, but they don't know how to monetize.
Mm.
That's why the first thing that we figured out was how to onboard influencers. And that's easy because it's just blasting the same platforms and saying telling people you can actually monetize what you're doing. And then within the circle of these two gentlemen, they were quite well connected, so they could activate networks of those small databases.
Mm.
And then I, you know, spin an event, and then these influencers told, hey, you can actually come with up to five of your friends. So that's how we built the database fairly
amazing.
Quickly.
Amazing.
And then on the business side, we didn't actually need a lot of businesses. I think we had like four businesses when we were starting, the ones that were willing to test this with us.
Mm.
But the budget was, they had good budgets to allow us to actually pay these influencers well enough for them to then leverage the referral program to onboard more influencers.
And then what happens, right? So you've got this thing is taken off.
Yeah.
What happened next?
The first thing is the founders. Huh? Like we always, when you're surprised by money, because we, you know, we just jumped into it, which was the first mistake I made.
Mm.
You're excited. As an engineer, build.
Mm.
Then it gets to a place where now folks realize what you have.
Mm.
That's a weird conversation, which is a mistake I promise myself I'll never walk into again.
Mm.
So then my equity position is quite squeezed. You're an engineering kid, like, you know.
Wow.
There's those dynamics. We start to fight, blah, blah, blah. This guy leaves. The same game. But then it settles.
So somebody left?
Yeah. So it was initially was four of us. Mm-hmm. Folks never count the guy that left, do they? So it was four of us. This gentleman, quite interesting. He was an MBA graduate and blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. we were trying to position him. Remember the two doctors, they uh-huh. don't have the business uh-huh. skill set, and I'm an engineer, so I'm the builder. So mm-hmm. we're trying to, you know, activate someone mm-hmm. here that can mm-hmm. be a co-founder and then mm-hmm. be the CEO.
The CEO, yeah.
But it didn't work out.
Yeah. Where did that guy come from? He was one of the doctor's friends?
One. It's the same circle.
Same circle, okay. Yeah. Interesting. So you must have been the youngest person here yes. by a country mile.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, wow. So what happens then? So this guy leaves, your equity position, you're kind of squeezed, which is just part of life and learning.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Then I think we just settle down and say, actually, we have something here, let's just focus.
Okay.
And my two doctors are still conflicted. Do we take the business route, or do we, you know...
keep doing medicine?
Yeah, medicine. And there was that sharp friction point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they were doing this part-time, obviously?
Yeah, part-time. Uh-huh. Everybody is doing this part-time, other than a couple of folks we had hired.
Okay.
And we are still working with WeWork then. It had not collapsed, in terms of the space and whatnot. And that's what will inform why we did the exit fairly quickly. Because from where I sit, I think we would have gone the distance and actually created and captured more value than we did. But they were always conflicted, like, do we go the distance or...
Nobody was super committed to make that leap.
Yeah. And good luck, Peter, you know, with your tiny, little, minute equity position, trying to convince these guys when the opportunity comes that we have to sell. So the person who acquired this, the company that acquired, we had actually approached them as a client, served them for, I think, a month and a half, and then they started that conversation. And I think they were smart enough to sense that we were actually collectively... the energy was that we want to exit.
They could smell it on you guys. You were not driving it, right?
Yeah.
You're part-timers, in a sense.
Yeah. So that then is fast-tracked fairly quickly. I think within 2 months, the deal was done.
Wow.
And we exit. Mm. And it's interesting. When you're doing these things, it's, you know, you're excited. You start to have these mental models of what you can do. The day you exit, you feel empty.
Interesting.
So then for me, I just say, I think then this is when I'm in my final year. I just decide to focus on school and complete, because then I was doing so many things. So my grades were not so well in, say, second into third year. So I was trying to take
kind of
the electives and take a lot of Swahili classes and whatnot to boost my engineering degree. So I just focused on that.
So you
then
finish,
graduated.
So fantastic. I mean, that's all in 4 years. You launch a product. First of all, you network, you meet these doctor people, you build a network of people you start a business with.
It wasn't even a product.
And then you acquire all in 4 years and you graduate. And then now what? What was the next step?
So the friction point, well, I was good. Like, I was not insecure. Will I get an apartment? Blah, blah, blah. I was good. I was very stable.
Yeah.
But then, remember, I'm a MasterCard Foundation scholar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by then, the program was designed that you must go back once you graduate.
Okay.
I mobilized my friends to lobby with the MasterCard Foundation to actually have them commission a research matters for folks who have transitioned back into the continent, having studied abroad. What value did they contribute once they transitioned back? And they did that. Actually, that report is online, which is some folks stay there for 3 years and then transition.
After school?
After school.
Okay.
5, 10 years. And they did this, and they realized for folks who had transitioned back to the country after you graduate, you are coming back to look for a job opportunity.
Yes. You're green. You're basically somebody with four years in a foreign country and
just a
degree. Diploma.
Yeah. And then you are extracted from that environment for 4 years. So you don't even have the networks.
Nothing. Yeah.
So you're not going to, yes, you'll excel for self, but the value you can create for your community, for your society, it's not that much.
Yeah.
So they remove that waiver, because then it was, remember, we are the first cohort. You're supposed to graduate and then a flight is booked for you, go back to Kenya. So they waive that. When they do that, And they say, no, that's no longer a requirement. You can stay once you graduate.
Mm.
There's the excitement to that, but then now you realize, okay, I actually want to gain experience here so that when I transition, at least I have something, a perspective, experience in a different market or country. Mm. So I transition, and when I transition, I took 8 months before I secured a job because I was not desperate, but I also knew what I was looking for. And I wanted
to go into... So when you transitioned
back here? No, from school to work.
From school to the marketplace.
Yeah, to the marketplace. Mm. So that took like 8 months. Frustrating.
Wow.
But it's because... So you get jobs from Oracle and they want to pay you 46K, which is okay. But I'm like, nah. Right? So aggressively, you are pursuing your IBMs and whatnot. Mm. And I was very keen on the number, but also the opportunity. What is it that I'm going to do? But I was very clear that I wanted to do cybersecurity. Mm. Now, the problem with cybersecurity, it's for 50s and above, 60. Folks who started as an IT assistant, specialist, move your way up until you become cybersecurity engineer. I just wanted to jump straight. So I applied to, so here's what happens around the same time. IBM has an internal cybersecurity arm. These guys, they all quit and go spin a company.
Hmm.
IBM is so desperate, it contracts them to outsource work to them.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So they have a company.
Hmm.
The thing is, they now have a lot of work because now it's no longer IBM. Mm-hmm. They can pipeline work from all these other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were desperate enough to want to train folks who didn't.
Right.
I think, what did they ask me? They actually wanted us to even have a driver license. I didn't have. I think I lied to them because I couldn't understand why do I need a driver license. But I think it's because of the movement. So I joined that. But then I knew what to do. Once I studied the environment and knew how that ecosystem works. Number one, because of the age, folks are slow. They are not that aggressive. So I saw an opportunity that I can actually work from 8 to 5, but then stay from 5 all the way to, say, 10 p.m. studying. So I move with speed and acquire around, what, I think 6 certificates. Quite aggressive. And that space, actually, if you have to exert this matters certification, because then you start to specialize.
Mm.
And remember, yes, you're an engineer, but you're a consultant. So they are basically selling the resume.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So at some point, I realized how much they were pricing me when they were bidding.
Mm.
So I decide to settle, which is, okay, I think I can get a better deal, but I will be patient. So I do that for what? I think almost 2 years. And then you're being deployed to so many organizations because it's sort of like consultancy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So work for financial institutions.
So you're learning
pipeline,
a lot. You're picking up a lot of information, how different businesses work, or, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the other thing about cybersecurity is for sure you're going to interface with C-suit,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. You
exposure.
Fast track, your skill set and your knowledge because of that exposure and the folks that you are networking with. And remember, because of what I was doing when I was in campus to network, then I knew this will come in handy. That
right.
if I'm intentional in terms of building solid relationship and networks. So at some point, I get approached by, you know, the HR, the good old HR folks who are trying to poach you. And they tell me there's this company that is looking to your resume, blah, 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 blah. And then I think it's the right time after 2 years to exit. They ask me to name a number. I name a number. And I'm very insecure because it's double. Right? And then I actually come back to Kenya around the same time because I remember they were calling me late in the night because of the time difference. And then I sort of like sense an opportunity when I realized that these guys actually earn a commission out of your monthly gross.
Mm-hmm.
They take the first, so if they're paying you 10K a month, they would also be paid 10K. So the equivalent of your monthly pay, that's what they take. This HR.
Perpetually?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I think it's the nuances around the space and whatnot. It's quite expensive then to actually hire.
Wow. Okay.
Then I shoot straight and say, what number should I push?
You ask them?
Yeah. The HR firm.
Oh, because now you're aligned.
Yeah.
uh-huh.
They tell me, I'm like, no, it's not going to go anywhere. They push it. So I go back, do the interviews. No one asked me about the number. So until today, I keep asking myself, okay, why name something different? Then it's no longer a question of how much, and you're actually good, you have found a career path, a very premium one in terms of, because you're working for this organization, the CRA equivalent of care, like very premium hospitals, banks like BMO, and that then will become the source of the TWIVA, the why, the drive. When, and I say this about money, to gain clarity, you need to have, to lose it all, or to have a lot. That's when you actually know what you really want to do. So by then, and I'm a very patient person, like I, you know, I don't want like fancy stuff and whatnot. And this is the genesis of what we were doing with equity. And the skill set that I got there was to treat money as working paper. Like it's, don't, it shouldn't go to your head. Like you're supposed to use this to advance to your thought, to do something bigger and better and impact people. So then I start to move. This one was aggressive. They're the number one on the North American matter cybersecurity. They're beating the big four. So the, of course they're getting any kind of a client, including your EY's outsourcing the cybersecurity to them then. And so you start to move around. And this now is 2019 into 2020. So there'll be COVID at some point. Did that, the COVID part is sort of like what gave me, you know, 2 hours because you're not commuting to start to program the TWIVA part now. You know, can I do this again and whatnot?
So, so wait, you're kind of jumping here. So, so you're doing this cybersecurity thing, your high flying position, awesome, kind of good money. Where does the idea of doing something else come from? Like TWIVA, why?
A hobby then? Okay. Sort of like, I just want to do something. Remember, I have read all these books, so many certificates, like seven of them. I was just trying to look for something else I can do. And now that you're working from home fully, you're not commuting. Once you're done with a project, you sort of like want to do something. COVID, a lot of restrictions. You can go out for whatever, like sports and whatnot. So just looking for something to do. But remember, there was always that gap that I didn't do what I would have done with the influencer marketing company. But I also used to think, okay, what if I was to do this back home, an untapped market? Then there was no anyone who was doing that on the continent. So there was always that. So it starts there, but you are programming, you're still doing your cybersecurity work. And then I got to a place which is a very interesting feeling. You feel empty. Like this cyber gives me a lot of money, like money is crazy. But I start to lose interest, I start to get bored, like it's not exciting me anymore.
Interesting.
So that's why you start to look for something else that will be exciting.
Keep you stimulated, yeah.
Yeah, so I do that for what? That phase where you're confused for, I think, 3 months. And then I quit.
This is 2020?
Yeah, this is 2020. So by then we have deployed the... Because then you're doing the same thing. Like, honestly, there's no complexity in a platform that is facilitating a handshake, the marketplace. Marketplace. It's quite simple. Folks like to complicate it, but it's just basically sign up.
It's and, a matching engine.
Yeah. So easy. You have the platform. And then we had tested in Kenya Matters, talking to a two, three, few people.
And when you say we, who was involved? Because you're doing the program.
Yeah, so it's two co-founders then. So myself and my co-founder, Esther.
And how did you meet? Who is she and how did this come about? Was she in Toronto with you? Amma, she was here? Amma,
yeah, so same circle. So she was in the Equity Bank, the same program where you are cashier, then leverage the same infrastructure for bootcamp, SATs, and then it happened that we went to the same school.
Interesting. So you guys were in Toronto at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay. So how did the... Okay. You... What was she doing? How did the idea of, hey, come, let's do this thing together come about? How did that conversation come about?
Yeah. So I'm still an engineer. In my head, I'm like, okay, I still need someone who is in the business world. And she's doing finance and economics. And of course, you're sort of like within the same friendship circle. So you're having this conversation. And also, there's that alignment of Mastercard, there's something they used to really do their matters, you have to go back. Now they are not forcing you, but they are showing you that you must go back and give back, which is, hey, once you stay here for 3-5 years, you must go back. So there were so many conversations around Mastercard Foundation scholars, like, what is it that we are going to do when we transition? So it just happened that we had the chemistry to actually strike a deal and say, hey, let's co-invest here and actually build something. But we are doing it on the side as a hobby then.
So after the 3 months, is where you were kind of like checked out of your work. So why, and then what?
So I quit and then start to focus.
So you quit your job?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I focus on this, but I'm still based in Toronto. So then we are now starting to hire people. We at iHub.
And this is self-funded?
Yeah, because of the exit, there were resources to actually bootstrap and not have to go through the chaos of fundraising and whatnot. But the moment I decided that this is what I was going to do, then I had to be quite aggressive. So that's, again, where the
conversation... So when you quit your job, that was the same... So those two things, it was the same inflection, right?
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to quit to do this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And remember, there's some details I'm omitting there. For example, there is you see an opportunity for a grant for it's just $4,500. Then I'm thinking, oh, good Lord, I can, you know, someone is footing the bill to host the platform, but it's still good money.
It's still good
but
money.
To test.
Takes you to the next.
Yeah, yeah. And then find an opportunity here in Kenya to compete. This is the FCDO through Kenya Catalytic Job Fund. I think it was on KTN and Fox are competing. So pitching and competing, that's what I like. So I apply, go through the processes of stage 1 to stage 10 and whatnot, and then I had to come pitch in Kenya physically. So, and for me, I had everything to lose because I had decided that this is what I was going to do. So of course, I gave it all.
That's amazing. Like you, but you're at the beginning of a career, so maybe you thought if it doesn't work out, you could always...
No, honestly, I never go into anything with that mentality that it's not going to work. Of course, I will be humble enough if I do fail. And I know it sounds arrogant, but with everything I have done in my life, I honestly have not registered a failure that I would point. Maybe it's perspective and whatnot, but yeah, I was not starting to ever to test anything because then I have done my
But
research.
you had already succeeded at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So you knew it can work. So
the
there was
chances
no
were
doubt.
Very
right.
high.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Of course, there's all these things like you can iterate or pivot. There's all this, but I was actually saying that I'm going to
Your
get
conviction
this done.
Level was super high. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Cool. Awesome.
So come win that competition fairly. That's 100 Gs. Then you know. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You lose, actually. 100K you lose.
Oh, okay. Even more.
So then you actually know, okay, now I can pace myself. Because, again, as an engineer, I like to build something, not this PR that, you know, folks are moving around shouting, but you don't have the fundamentals, the core fixed.
Right. The product.
Like, you, what's the value that you are creating so that we can discuss that you're going to capture out of that you're creating.
Right.
So I pace myself. It happens at the same time, other people, of course, that's the market dynamics, they're seeing the same opportunity.
Ideas kind of are like tuning forks, right? People kind of hear the same thing
This is when you're starting to have competition coming into the space. Because they are catching up, the genius move is you take the PR out. You also happen to be a lucky person in the sense that you're competing with an engineer who is still in the woods, matters the product is not ready, let's tweak this and whatnot.
So you took the engineer out, let's perfect the product.
Yeah.
The competition took the...
Let's shout and be the known,
go-to
brand matters influencer marketing.
Right, interesting. Yeah. Well, so looking back, that was a lesson learned.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the things that we are trying to do well this year. But also we are doing that because we believe we have a premium product that creates meaningful value. So then it's the right time to shout. But yes, I do regret that I didn't start with the PR route, right? So And this is just, again, comparing value. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're dealing with the same customers that are moving from you to your competition and some that are moving to. So you can actually assess for who has meaningful value.
From a product perspective?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, mm-hmm. From a product perspective, because it's a product game here, mm-hmm. matters the value, mm-hmm. how we are mm-hmm. delivering right. that value right. to our right. customers. Awesome. So yes, mm-hmm. if I would do it differently, I would actually start with the PR.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, given that you're a product, your product chops are super strong, I mean, it wouldn't hurt, right? If you did the PR thing, I'm assuming it, if you could still keep the focus on the product,
yeah.
you would nail it. And it's always about, you know, doing those two things effectively, in the right order, in the right sequence. So talk to us a little bit about what, you know, where you are today, you know, Twiva, the product, the business, you know, let's dive into that a little bit in terms of what problem you solve.
Yeah.
And what the opportunity looks like.
Absolutely. And maybe, you know, sort of like the Twiva we have today, of course, it's not the Twiva we started. So there's some mm-hmm. Iterations mm-hmm. there and transition in terms mm-hmm. of...
So what did you start with?
We started with influencer marketing, which okay. is just connect a brand and an influencer. Mm-hmm. And then remember, this is COVID-19, mm-hmm. So 2020. Mm-hmm. And we were very intentional that we are going to start with micro and small businesses because mm-hmm. we knew these guys don't have a route to market mm-hmm. and the level of field is not, you know, it's not fair for, mm-hmm. for these small brands matters access to capital.
Right.
So we wanted to serve these guys. The first thing we realized is they don't have the budgets to afford mm-hmm. influencer marketing, even mm-hmm. though it's a cheaper alternative to, say, your mainstream media. Mm. But they don't have the budget for it. But also, they're more keen on sales conversion, not brand awareness.
Not brand awareness.
So you keep hearing these business owners telling you, but I gave you my 50 Gs, but I never sold a product. And it's quite frustrating for self and for them.
Right.
And then good luck explaining, oh, there's leech impression, late tweets, who cares? I didn't sell a goddamn thing. So for me, I like to play the long-term game. So I'm asking myself, okay, if I'm going to do this for 10 years, I have to listen. These guys are saying whatever I'm selling is gas.
It's not working.
Influencer marketing. Like, who cares that the whole country is talking about you and your product, but you're not selling a single product. Mm. So from the onset, there's that gap. Like, this is not enough. Mm. So, of course, you go back to innovation, which is to study the space, see what you can do. Because of COVID-19, you have business wars with your Amazons and Facebooks in the sense that Amazon is starting to advertise on their platforms, so they are taking the advertisement dollar from
the
your
dollars.
Facebooks and whatnot.
Interesting, yeah.
So then the Facebooks and the Googles think they can flip that and also have the shops now, whatever the TikToks
and
the
things Amazon were just doing. Evolving so rapidly in that space, right?
So then I see an opportunity that if Instagram is going to have a storefront, Facebook is going to have a storefront, then I can be the infrastructure that connect that business to the these stores, and I can do that because the creators will own the storefronts. Mm. So then if I allow
the
that business, the influencers because the platform calls them whatever, creators.
Yeah,
and by
creators.
That I mean they can have a storefront, businesses and creators, the influencers.
Right.
So then I see an opportunity to now leverage the same infrastructure, but now to not just market through the influencer, but to sell through the influencer. So you're working with them as resellers mm-hmm. or sales rep, mm-hmm. but then you have to build the infrastructure to move products on these platforms.
And when you say move product, you mean just, what do you mean by that? Because moving product is physically or digitally?
Digitally. By that I mean, so because how it works today is that the business would list a product, and then these products are exposed to all the influencers on the platform. They select what they want to sell, but you can also do the product influencer matching. That's where you can leverage a lot of technology because you're pulling data points from social media platforms and you have the data points around the brand and the product. So it's very easy to come up with models that can actually match the product to the likely seller who is an influencer.
Mm.
But then the moment they select that product, one-click solution, can you move that to their Facebook account, their Instagram account, their Twitter account, so that if I see it on Facebook, on Instagram, I just need to click and then go to the checkout process and then transact with that business. So that's the opportunity we saw. Mm. And that has become the Twiva today as an influencer-driven social commerce platform. Okay. So that you are doing the influencer marketing part, the marketing, but also the sales. This way, now you can quantify the return on investment when someone pays you 50K.
Right.
And then you are driving meaningful value that actually this guy sold and has a GMV of this number, right? Mm. So it's very easy to articulate value when you're even pitching to these businesses. Because the problem with the influencer marketing, and that continues to date, many would argue that they are digital billboards, that anything goes. And you're not committing to numbers, because guess what? Even tracking metrics that have value, you don't. So what do? They'll have to sell the vanity metrics, which is the likes, the views, right?
The stuff that doesn't move the needle for real business at the end of the day, unless you're an established brand and you're doing some other reason why you're doing that. How have the, content creators, influencers responded to this evolution?
Yeah. I would say it's initial stages in terms of awareness and adoption.
Mm. And the less, because now they're being held accountable.
Oh yeah, that's it actually, the resistance.
Mm.
So actually we have not focused on the influencer side matters influencing this. You just need to look at how money moves, who has the wallet.
Mm.
So then if you convince them that actually you can do influencer marketing,
which
this
is the
way,
businesses.
Yeah, the businesses. Mm. Or I can give you a better way that you can actually drive value for self, sales. Because, for example, the social commerce business model for us is actually, we can only capture value we create for you, because it's a margins game.
Right.
So you list at a wholesale pricing point, we sell at retail recommended pricing point. The value for us is that margin, which is now more sustainable for you as a business, because we have to create value before we capture. And traditional influencer marketing has that problem, is that you're paying that influencer and hoping to God that they may be create some form of value to you.
Right?
That Eli Komondi is talking about your business tomorrow morning. But
can you tie that to real revenues?
Yeah. Today, and there's also another gap within this market. Mm. There is the integrity part.
Mm.
So yes, sometimes you'll execute a very premium campaign, but do you think the client is going to tell you the accurate number in this environment, this market? So there's those nuances. But now if you have the infrastructure for e-commerce, transactions are happening on my platform.
Yeah.
So if we sold two cups for you, or five bottles of whatever, shampoo, we'll know that that's the value we created for you.
Mm.
But that said, it's still nascent.
Mm.
So we still need to invest, to innovate, to go the distance before folks can really take this up.
You know, essentially this is, it's very similar to Shopify, but with the influencers, right? Essentially.
Yes.
So Shopify started by just enabling sellers, right, on their platform.
Yeah.
You are you're looking to convert influencers to become sellers, right, in a sense. But does it have to stop there? Or what are the thresholds of somebody being an influencer, right, in terms of reach? From your assessment.
Yeah. Huh. And I hope,
because I think that has gone down a little bit.
Yeah. I hope not to be
influencers or whatever.
Yeah. Look, this town is full of BS. Right? So
I'm glad you said it, but I agree with you.
Yeah. No, true. So this conversation, I'm actually hating it these days when people ask you, okay, what type of influencer? And we have these beautiful terms like nano influencer, micro, mid-tier, mega, celebrity influencer, right? Now we have community influencers.
Okay, interesting.
It's a good, I don't know whether I can go there, but I call it intellectual masturbation, having a conversation for the sake of it, right? But in terms of value, I don't think we should be discussing the type or who is an influencer. To me, it's very simple.
Mm.
Can you influence? Then we discuss what influence is. Mm. Can you convince someone to buy something?
Mm. But anybody can do that, essentially.
So, yeah. So from that point, then you don't even don't need to talk about an influencer and who they are.
Mm.
Right? but they are still, you know, you can classify them in terms of their numbers.
Because
when folks are having that conversation of nano, mega, they're basically discussing the number of followers.
Right.
Like someone was asleep and they just clicked on the follow button. That's now a number that you're actually using to quantify.
But let me ask you this. So have you, given this new model, maybe, I don't know if you've tested it out already, between, if somebody has multiple followers, it goes to reason, and maybe not always true, that they should have more sales if they are pushing a product. What's her name? These people have built their whole empire around this, the Kardashians and all this stuff. They can start a brand anytime. I mean, that's kind of the game that everybody's playing right now.
Yeah.
Right? Especially, in fact, it's very true. Those folks in the Kardashians, this guy who came to build wells in Kenya, what's his name there?
Mr. Beast,
right? Yeah. I mean, he starts businesses because he's an influencer. He puts products out into the market.
Yeah.
There's no getting away from the fact that your reach will determine your success, right?
I think there are nuances to it. So there are creators that started with value they were creating for people. By proxy, they created a community, a loyal one. So it becomes very easy to spin a brand that you can monetize. Because these people are your feedback loop. They are telling you in terms of the content they are consuming, what they find value in. So this is actually an influencer who creates a product or a brand and then monetize. That's difference. There's a difference there, sorry, in terms of if you are to push another product that is not yours, then you also must understand your community and what they like.
Interesting. So,
And the problem here is when brands are coming to these influencers, these ones, the equivalent of Kardashian in Kenya, they are not coming to them because there's that alignment of the product I have and the community you have. They are coming to you because you have massive numbers, right?
So, but there's some products that, you know, are for the masses, right?
Yeah, I mean, so But again, there's just, the reality is, with a lot of respect, there's just some influencers I'm not going to be influenced by them to buy, say, a financial product. Like, no, right? But you are the bigger influencer. We respect you because, you know, maybe in the entertainment space, when I go home, I want to watch your content and you create value by making me happy. But I'm not going to take financial advice from you, right? Even though you could argue the financial product is for masses. So the awareness part, they excel. To raise awareness around the product, the brand, the services, they excel there. But that's not to say that they are not mega influencers that align, because some folks have actually packaged themselves very well as a brand, that there is issues you care for, advocate for. So if you are to drive a narrative or a product through you, it's actually going to stick because you're authentic. You actually have substance, so you can easily influence people.
And so, and those are the minority, I would imagine, right?
Yeah.
People can trust inherently, not just, they're just not maybe nice to look at or entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting nuance. Really quickly, if we could just talk about the different stages and milestones you've been through, right? Of course, initially it's product, and then, you know, maybe market access, and then fundraising, just some of those steps you've been through.
So 2021, which is when we choose to focus on this fully and actually transition into the country, that's the time when we are launching the social commerce part. So from the onset up to 2021, we are still doing influencer marketing as the core business. So again, then we start to join all these accelerator programs. I think we have done 7 today. Some of these are not really accelerator programs, but that's a conversation for another day. Matters what are you? Did you accelerate anything?
Right. So why did you choose to do 7 accelerator programs? What were you looking for?
Well, it's never 7. It's this one, right? And then you find yourself like, hey, actually, wait a minute. It's been 7?
I think that's about it.
So the initial, well, I approach accelerator programs from a very different perspective. I just want one thing. So if it's the network, I'm going to go through the pain of, you know, sitting down and, you know, knowing what MVP is again for the seventh time. But there's that. There must be that one thing that I'm going to extract.
Right.
My best accelerator program is the Synapis Ascent one, because this is not about being lectured. It's actually you doing the work, but them guiding you, and you must integrate that you're showing you into the little business. Anyways, so then we are doing all these accelerator programs, and by proxy, we're using those opportunities to advance the tech. Because remember, for the social commerce, even today, you really need to innovate. And of course, the beauty is that there is room for innovation, because for a marketplace, just connecting demand and supply side, you are quite limited in terms of, because today folks will tell you that they have this fancy influencer discovery module, AI, blah, blah, blah. You don't need AI there. No, you don't. It's simple. Like, hey, this is a guy who does what. The level of tech that you have to innovate there is really minimal.
Right.
So we are innovating around, okay, how, for example, do you match that product to the right influencer? How do you track the conversation, the products? How do you integrate payment gateway so that someone can transact on wherever they are, whatever platform, if it's social media and whatnot? So we do that, and then 2022 is where now you're sort of starting to say, okay, the product is good. Let's now start to look into the go-to-market strategy. And for us, again, the strategy matters going to market has always been, you must crack one before you go to the others. Because again, you and I have had those conversations, matter the excitement of when should you be in Nigeria and it's tomorrow morning. And for whatever reason, you decided that you're going to go to Uganda. I don't know, right? And it's your first time to even go to the country,
right.
Which is quite, I find it quite fascinating for this hype around, we in 7 African countries. I think you should be in one.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have a focus in just one market, the Kenyan market, trying to figure out the product market fit. Because the other thing is, the reality is that we don't have that, and so many people don't, yet they think they do. So we are still in that process, but the good news is that we are actually profitable. So we can sustain this business, and we are building something that should preferably outlast us. But one thing is for sure is that we are building a business that can last and can go the distance. That's why we don't have that excitement of when should we go to Nigeria and Ghana and Uganda and Tanzania.
So what does this, what does Tuva become at the, what success look like end state here, right? Because, you know, I mean, there's only so many influencers, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, so how do you, what's about to scale here, or if that's what you're after, and what does that look like?
I think in the long run, whether it'll be us, the current team, or someone else who takes up what we are doing with Tuva and takes it to the next stage, I think to call Tuva, in terms of the stage we are in, an influencer marketing platform or a social commerce platform is to miss the opportunity that this can be. How I like to process it in my mental models is that we're actually building an infrastructure to power businesses. So long as the goal is to help them to effectively gain access to market or customers, there's so many things you can do. So today, if you sign up on our platform as a business, you can actually learn your business end to end. Because we are giving you the storefront so you can sell directly to your customer as a business. We give you inventory management, order management, payment gateways, all are integrated so that you can easily transact with your customers. We give you financial services because now we can embed finance on the platform. If it's influencers, we are giving them asset financing through partnership, but it's through that platform that is powering all these things. And then logistics and fulfillment is also baked into the product. So we can power your business by you just being on Tuva without even giving you this engine, the resellers engine, sorry. And then on the influencer side, that's where we think we can have the multiplier effect, the network effect. Because it's that one brand that is being pushed by thousands of influencers. And they have, say, 3 social media platforms. So you start to see how this multiplies in terms of digital footprint.
Right.
And also a higher chance of sales conversion. So how I like to look at it is that we are building an infrastructure to power businesses so that they can effectively gain access to market. So if it's things like content, if you look at the data, and there's a report that was done by, I think they are known as Calibau and MasterCard Foundation recently. They were looking actually in Kenya in terms of digital adoption. How many micro, small, and medium enterprises, businesses are on, say, on Facebook, Instagram, what are they doing with that? It turns out we actually have a lot of businesses are on these platforms, but they are dormant. They don't even post because of so many reasons. Some don't have the skill set, the capital to maybe hire someone who does that. Also, the appreciation of digital. Some folks don't really care for Facebook and Instagram. So, okay, we ask ourselves, when we wanted the influencers to be the salespeople, we were betting on the fact that they are good content creators, that they can package the value for whatever you are selling through content creation, and that way you have a better sales conversion. So there's something there matters, content. Now you have your large language models, your AI, and all the hype. But if you remove all that hype, you can do simple things like automate content creation, which is what we are doing, such that if you list these products, the AI tool can do a better job than that business owner, matters creating content with consistency in terms of quality and the frequency. And then because of the scheduling part, you can now fully automate even the scheduling. Better yet, it's shoppable content. So the AI tool will just create a sales caption or Facebook caption, pull the product, tag the product, push it to these digital platforms. So now you can fully automate that content. So if you're doing all these things, it's no longer an influencer marketing platform. It's actually an infrastructure to power businesses. Is it content that you need? Is it branding? Is it sales? Is it payment gateways? That infrastructure can power your business end to end. So the long-term game is that. But then, of course, you can classify that and call it social commerce in terms of how we are transacting in social setup, activating social networks, and it's people selling to peers and people within their circles of influence.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask or kind of bring this up, and we kind of as we wrap up here. That sound, is that all built or is that all still conceptual?
That's built today.
That's built.
Yeah.
So you've built a lot.
Yeah.
But you also say you don't have product market fit, Peter.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Here's the thing, from where I see it, with a lot of humility, and I think we have had that conversation with you and disagreed to some extent, like when do you know that you have it? Sometimes things change. When we were doing influencer marketing, I think we had cracked product market fit. But also looking at other players within that ecosystem, and some are going out of business, they were using what you thought was product market fit and they are failing. So did they crack it, right? So how I'm looking at product market fit from where I sit, it has to come with the scale that this is something that you can now start to replicate fairly easily in terms of, because if you're going to this customer, they are changing, they are customizing how they want to engage with you. There's still money. You're still making good money.
But
the formula is not one. It's not unified. So that's what we are struggling with.
Right.
And then to merge the marketing and the sales part to make it one. So things like subscription, that would make a lot of sense to us. But remember, we're in Kenya. Folks are allergic to subscriptions here. So you can't force that.
Right.
So you still have to, this guy's customizing a plan because they just want influencer marketing to start with before they transition to this one.
Yep, I hear you. Fantastic. Well, listen, we could go on for hours and we don't have all the time in the world, but it's fantastic to speak with you, to have you as our first guest as we relaunch Chinua Maji Podcast in a studio setting. I guess as we wrap up, I usually have rapid fire questions that I ask. I'll just say a word.
Yeah.
And I want you to respond with what comes first to mind, and then we can call it a day.
Super.
So, entrepreneurship.
Grit.
Grit. Awesome. Africa.
The future.
I couldn't have said it better myself. 2030.
I wanted to say Kibaki, but
that's such an inside Kenya joke. You know this goes global. But
anyways, 2030. I feel like as a continent, that's when we start to really position ourselves as an equal to the other players. For Kenya, I think we will be the gateway to the African market.
Fantastic. Mr. Kironji, good to have you on the Chidiabaji podcast.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.